Welcome to the Compliance 911 Show, a no-nonsense podcast discussing hot topics for today's busy compliance professional. It's everything you wanted to know about regulatory compliance, but we're afraid to ask. And now, here are your hosts, Dean Stockford of M&M Consulting and Len Susio of GeoData Vision.
Hi, Len. It's great to see you. What exciting topic do you have for our listeners today?
Well, Dean, I can tell you as we record this session at the end of February 2024, I've received countless inquiries from bankers asking, how will the new CRA affect our bank's performance? They know that with the new rule, the regulators have rigged the game to make it tougher to pass a CRA exam, and they know it because the regulators proved it with the tables published in the new rules preamble. Those tables show that the CRA exam failure rates would have been increased tenfold from its historic 1.2% failure rate to something more like 12% had the new rule been in effect from 2018 to 2020. And they also know it because the FDIC chair Grinberg publicly stated that a goal of the new rule was to, quote, raise the bar to pass a CRA exam. So historically, one of every 100 or so CRA exams ended in a failing grade. Now bankers are faced with the prospect that one in every 10 exams will end in a less than satisfactory rating. So it's no wonder that bankers are suffering from CRA anxiety today and are asking the question, will my bank be one of the one in every 10 banks that will fail their CRA exam under the new rule? Bankers want to know the answer to that question, and they are wondering if there's a way they can estimate how they will look when the new rule retail lending test becomes effective less than 2 years from now. So my goal today is to explain to bankers how they can indeed develop an approximation on how they will be rated under the new rule.
Well, I can tell you many of the bank clients that we have are asking the same questions, Len, and there is a major, major concern. I mean, my simple answer always is, you know, hire us and we'll certainly help you. But I'm certain you have the attention of our audience today. And exactly, you know, I'll ask, you know, exactly how can a bank figure out how they will look under the new rules? I mean, we as you know, Len, we tell them all the time to test, you know, to do some performance tests now in advance of their CRA exam to figure out where they are. But what's that going to look like after these new rules?
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to talk about now. There are several steps to developing an estimation of how a bank will fare under the new rule, and particularly the new retail lending test. So first, every CRA officer should understand that the most important and the most decisive test in a CRA exam is what they call the retail lending test. A bank must attain at least a low satisfactory rating on that test to be eligible to receive an overall CRA performance rating of satisfactory or better. Failing the retail lending test is not an option. No matter how well you do on the other CRA tests, if you don't pass the retail lending test, it's game over. So a bank must focus on how it will do on the retail lending test to gain insight into if they even have a chance to attain a satisfactory composite performance rating. Second, aside from its facility-based assessment areas, a bank should determine if it will have any retail lending assessment areas. Those assessment areas are based on thresholds for closed-end mortgages and small business loans originated and purchased in any MSA, excluding any areas where there's facility-based assessment areas. And the thresholds are 150 or more closed-end mortgages and 400 or more small business loans originated or purchased in any one of those MSAs. Once the assessment areas are identified, the third step will be to determine the benchmarks against which a bank will be compared in any assessment area.
Now, there's something glowing at me right now, and I'd have to say, did you overlook by design the ORLA, as we know it, the outside retail lending assessment?
Yes, Dean, I'm glad you caught that. I am deliberately avoiding the ORLA for two reasons. Number one, there's potentially many what they call component geographic areas within the ORLA that may result in a geometric expansion of the calculations that need to be done. And second, the relative volume of lending in the ORLA for most banks will be very minimal, and therefore it would require a lot of effort and little benefit to do that exercise. The cost-benefit principle applies here, and that's why I chose not to discuss that in today's presentation.
Yeah, you so eloquently lay these things out. That explains it for sure. So what's the fourth step for the bank to estimate how it may look at under the new CRA rule?
Okay, well, as I was saying, once you've determined your assessment areas, the next thing is to identify and measure the benchmarks against which you will be compared. So essentially, the new CRA has what they call two distribution tests within the retail lending test. These are the, quote, the geographic distribution test, and second, the borrower distribution test. If those descriptions sound familiar, they should be. They're the same geographic and borrower distribution tests that have been in effect since 1995, except under the new rule, they will be measured only in terms of the count of loans originated and purchased with no dollar values considered. Not only that, the reference points or benchmarks are the same, but there's a lot of calculations, and we'll get into that.
What are the benchmarks, Len?
All right, let me get into this. So let me talk first about the geographic benchmarks, which are based, which will be based on the market benchmarks, okay? The market benchmarks themselves are the credit markets. When the regulation talks about the market reference points or standards, they're talking about the activity of all reporting lenders under HMDA or CRA. And it will be the first geographic benchmark is going to be the relative percent of loans in the low-income tracts and the relative percent of loans in the moderate-income tracts. Now, the geographic benchmarks that are based on community reference points, those are the demographic benchmarks, and they include the relative distribution of owner-occupied housing in the low-income tracts and the distribution of owner-occupied housing in the moderate-income tracts for comparison to a bank's closed-end mortgage activity. For small business loans, the demographic benchmark will be the relative percent of businesses in the assessment area located in the low-income tracts and the relative percent located in the moderate-income tracts. Now, those are the geographic reference points or benchmarks. When it comes to the borrower benchmarks, the market reference point for mortgages will be the distribution of mortgages within the market extended to low-income borrowers and then the percent extended to moderate-income borrowers. For small business lending, the market benchmark will be the relative percent of loans extended to businesses measured by their gross annual revenue. When the new rule becomes completely effective, the gross annual revenue will be broken into three categories, unlike the two today. Those categories will be less than or equal to $250,000 of gross annual revenue and more than $250,000, but $1 million or less of gross annual revenue, and of course, over $1 million of gross annual revenue. It will not be possible to estimate this latter refinement of the current rule because the current market data is based on a line of demarcation at the $1 million gross annual revenue level or less without any distinction at the $250,000 per year level. Nonetheless, the current market data is still useful for our purposes today, which is to approximate or estimate how a bank might fare under the new rule as it's going to be implemented. So when it comes to the community benchmark, the distribution of families within the assessment area that are low income and that are moderate income is the reference point. For small business loans, the standard would be businesses with gross annual revenue at the $250,000 and $1 million levels.
Okay, so you've taken us through the four steps. What actually happens next?
Well, okay, it gets more and more interesting as we get deeper into this. The next step is to apply what the new rule calls the multipliers. So to determine what they call the tailored or calibrated benchmarks. So for the purpose of estimating whether a bank is likely to pass or fail the retail lending test, it's not necessary to apply all the different multipliers embedded in the new rule. All that we want to know is the bank likely to pass the low satisfactory rating in the new rule? We can develop the calibrated benchmarks for attaining that minimally acceptable performance level by applying the 80% standard to the market benchmarks and 60% to the community benchmarks. So, for example, let's just say closed-end mortgage lending activity in the low-income tracts is 10% in a given assessment area. Well, that means that a bank has to achieve at least 80% of that 10% or an 8% penetration rate in the low income tracks. So at this point now, you've developed the calibrated benchmarks, and the final two steps involve computing your bank's penetration rates in the low and moderate income tracks and to the low and moderate income borrowers and the very small business borrowers. The final step will be to compare your penetration rates to the calibrated standards, which I was just explaining, and you will then have an idea as to how you are likely to be rated under the new retail lending test. So let me just make sure it's clear to the audience. And with an example, a bank's operating in an assessment area where 10% of the market of closed-end mortgages is in the low-income tracks. We know, therefore, that the bank has to get at least 80% of that, which would be 8%. Alternatively, they could look at owner-occupied housing. That would be the community benchmark and how that's distributed in the low and moderate income tracks and whatever percentage that is, and take 60% of that, because the multipliers for the community benchmarks are 60%, where for the market benchmarks, it's 80%. So you have a precise mathematical way of approximating how your bank will fare under the new rule. If you follow these steps one at a time, you can get a pretty good ballpark idea of how much trouble you're going to have to pass the retail lending test. And that is the sine qua non of passing your CRE exam.
Wow, Len. You certainly have educated our audience and how they may estimate their performance under the new rules, which is fantastic. I have one final question. Where can a bank get the market and community data that is needed for computing those calibrated benchmarks you just spoke of?
Okay, well, the market and the demographic data can be obtained from the HMDA and the CRA aggregate and disclosure data and the demographics, which can be found in the FFIEC demographic files, except for the business demographics, which are proprietary data. But I wouldn't worry about that data because it is far less important than the market data itself. I've always considered the market data to be the most meaningful, the most relevant, the most accurate barometer of what the community's need is for credit services. So as long as a bank has the market data, it should be in a position to reasonably approximate how it will be rated under this new CRA. Now, as we're recording this session today at the end of February, GeoData Vision's also planning on publishing the benchmarks and the calibrated benchmarks for every county in the United States. And we expect to have that information about that data posted on our website at geodatavision.com by the time this podcast is released in March. So just visit the GeoData Vision website, geodatavision.com, to learn more about the easy way to get the necessary data for this exercise.
Excellent. 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 Len, this has been an exceptionally informative podcast about a very important and timely topic, even though we've talked about the fact that it's in a lawsuit as we speak. This is Dean Stockford from M&M Consulting saying thank you for attending today's podcast.
And this is Len Susio with GeoData Vision saying, we hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and found it informative. Please send us your suggestions for future podcast projects.
Thanks for listening to the Compliance 911 Show. If you like the podcast, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you're at it, please give us a like and review to help others find the show. As always, links are in the show notes, and you can always find us online at compliance911show.com. Follow M&M Consulting and GeoData Vision on LinkedIn for all the latest news and information on compliance hot topics.